Revelation 13, please. Revelation chapter 13. If you're joining us this morning and you're a visitor with us, typically what I do in the month of December is kind of refresh some of the things we've talked about throughout the year. And if you're a member here, you'll know the longest series that I gave this year was all about the image of God. I began it second Sunday in July, carried it through about 3 weeks ago. And there was one more sermon in that series I wanted to present, but I didn't want to make us tired of the topic either. So this morning what we're going to do is look at the image of the beast and just a fascinating, fascinating text. In the series, you'll remember back with me a little bit, we looked back to creation. I'll give just a real quick summary of this. In creation, God said, "Let us make man in our image." And then we looked at all the implications of that throughout the whole biblical narrative of what it means for man and woman to be made in God's image. This morning, what I would actually like to do is kind of reverse it. I would like for us to look forward. I'd like for us to look forward at the image and ask this question: what is the end of the image? What's the end of the image? So we've talked about the beginning of the image. It is from creation, we have been made in God's image, and every last one of us have been made in God's image, and that image has been restored through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. But what's the end of the image? Where is this image leading, and where is it going? To answer this, we are going to look at Revelation 13 and talk about the image of the beast. Let's read the text together. Revelation 13, verse 11. Revelation 13, verse 11. "Then I saw another beast rising out of the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, and it spoke like a dragon. It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence, and makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. It performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of people. And by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence that is of the beast, it deceives all those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. And it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast, so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the beast and those who worship it to be slain. Also, it causes all, both great and small, both rich and poor, free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or on their forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark that is the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who understands calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Bum, bum, bum. What a great uplifting text, isn't it? This is a fascinating text. Let me tell you why. As you pick up in the book of Revelation, Revelation has two main sections to it. Revelation 1 through 11, and then Revelation 12 through 22. No matter what your view of the book of Revelation is, it is almost universally agreed that Revelation 12 and Revelation 5 are accounting the same stories from very different angles. And here's the story. Revelation 5 and Revelation 12 both tell the story of the ascension of Jesus. Jesus ascends back to heaven, having defeated death. And then heaven and earth break loose. Because Jesus has been slain, yet death did not keep him captive, but he was raised and brought to newness of life, he then causes a great war to come out, and the enemy of this is a dragon. A dragon comes forth, and this dragon then creates a first beast that is an artificial image of a lamb. And then this beast has a second beast to come. And we're reading about this second beast. Notice here what this second beast does. This second beast was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast. Here's what happens. The second beast makes an image for the first beast. We have to talk about that first beast, don't we? If you back up to Revelation 13, verse 1, Revelation 13, verse 1, I saw a beast rising out of the sea with 10 horns and 7 heads and 10 diadems on its horns and blasphemous names on its heads. And the beast that I saw was like a leopard. Its feet were like a bear's, its mouth like a lion's mouth. And it is to the dragon it gave power and his throne and authority. One of his heads seemed to be a mortal wound, but its mortal wound was healed, and the whole earth marveled as they followed the beast. And they worshiped the dragon, for he had given his authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like this beast, and who can fight against it?" As you work through Revelation, I think this becomes abundantly clear. There are three main antagonists of the second part of Revelation: the dragon, the first beast, and the second beast. Each of these are artificial imitators of the true triune God. As you work through Revelation, it's very clear the dragon is a false god, a false father. He is the one who claims to have the power to create. He is the one who claims to be sovereign. He is the one who claims to have the ability to make, but he doesn't. He's a false god. The first beast then is a false Christ. He even takes on the appearance of Christ in Revelation 5. He tries to take on the image of Jesus and tries to look like him and act like him and speak like him, yet the things that he does are blasphemous and false and artificial. The second beast then, of course, is a false spirit. What this false spirit is doing is making all those on the earth deceived so that they will worship the image of the first beast. Notice the spirit language here. I want to talk in particular about this second beast for a moment. You'll notice back to Revelation 13, 15, the second beast was allowed to give breath to the image of the first beast. Who gives breath? The Spirit. The Spirit gives breath. This second beast is trying to give breath to the image of the first beast. Notice verse 13. The second beast performs signs, even making fire come down from heaven and the earth in front of people. And by signs, it is allowed to work in the presence of the first beast. What does the Spirit do? Give signs and wonders and confirmation. He's trying to take on the role of the Spirit. And what does he do? The second beast deceives those who dwell on the earth. The Spirit, John 16, will come and lead you onto all truth. This second beast is deceiving the nations, telling them now, and this is the important part, the second beast tells the dwellers of the earth to make an image for the first beast that is wounded by the sword and yet lived. Here's the story of what happens. In Genesis 1, God makes man, and he makes man in his own image. Thousands of years later, it's abundantly clear in human history, we have not gotten it right. Rather than performing righteousness and goodness and holiness, we have performed sin and unrighteousness and wickedness. So then, the God who in the beginning made man in his own image sends his Son to bear the true image of man. The image that Jesus bears is given by God, and he bears that image. But this is what happens in Revelation 13. In Revelation 13, you have a dragon who makes a first beast that tries to act like Jesus, and a second beast arises that tries to act like the Spirit. This false spirit, this second beast, deceives those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. Where does the image of the beast come from? Interestingly, it comes not from the dragon, but it comes from the earth. Those who dwell on the earth are deceived by the second beast, and they make an image for the first beast. The image that this beast offers is given not from the dragon, but it's artificial, it's false. Now I'm going to take it one step further. Follow this narrative with me, y'all. Revelation, especially this part, is telling a narrative. You have to follow the narrative to understand what's going on here. especially this part of Revelation, Revelation 12 through really Revelation 19, is telling this great apocalyptic, strange battle that is going on. But here's what's happening. A second beast, this false spirit, is deceiving the people on the earth and telling them, make an image for a beast. Now, let's stop and ask this question then. What's the nature of the image of the beast? If you listen to the whole series I presented from July through, I guess it was November, that phrase should make bells go off in your head. What is wrong with the image of the beast? What's wrong with the image of the beast? Here's the problem. The image of the beast is false because it's bestial, it's beast-like. Remember from Genesis 1, God gave humans a choice. Act like men and women made in my image, or act like the entirety of the rest of creation. Either act as people or act as beast. It's the same choice that Daniel 7 gives, and it's the same choice that Revelation 13 is now providing. What is most ironic about this image is this is an image of a beast. The image that is given in Genesis 1 is the image of God. It is man. It's man. Well, what then happens to this image? Those who worship this image, what eventually is their fate? Well, initially, good things are going to happen to them. Those who bow down and worship the image of the first beast, those who are deceived into making it, those who are deceived into thinking that it has breath, those who are deceived into worshiping it, initially good things happen to them. Look at verse 16. Also, the second beast causes both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or on the forehead. This is what it does. Those who worship the image of the beast, those who go after the image of the beast, they get a mark on their forehead or on their right hand. So that, verse 17, no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is the name of the beast or the number of its name. Notice what this mark is. It's not given over to speculation. The mark that's given is the, this is going to be very, very important in a minute. It's the name of the beast or the number of its name. So here's what happens. A great war is taking place, and the second beast deceives those who are on earth into making an image for a first beast. It's artificial. It's false. God has given the true image of God in his people, but now the people of the world are deceived into giving a false image to a false beast. And those who worship this image are given security. They're given safety. They're given privilege. If you have the name of the beast or its number on your forehead or on your right hand, you can buy, you can sell, you can live on this earth with security. But, verse 17, no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is the name of the beast or its name. What happens if you don't have the mark of the beast? You can't buy, you can't sell. Necessarily, then, you can't eat. You can't live. You're not allowed safety and privilege on this earth. So here's what happens. In this short time, having the mark of the beast, a false image perhaps, gives you safety and privilege. You can buy and sell on this earth because things are going asunder and they're going into chaos and awry. Yet eventually, the fate will change. Now, what is this whole 666 business? I'll explain it in more detail another time, but I can't skip over it. It's very important. As you go through Revelation, 7 is the number of perfection. 1 less than 7 is, of course, 6. It's imperfect. It's incomplete. Why 3? Father, Son, Spirit. It's an imperfect triad. Much as you have dragon, first beast, second beast, you now have 666. 4, the text tells us explicitly, it is the number of a man. Grayson has told me that at times he's been at Chick-fil-A and people have been getting their orders and it'll be $6.66. Give me an unsweetened tea on there so that it can be $7.21. That's not what the text is talking about. This is talking about the number of man. It's not God. It's not 777, it's 666. It's imperfect. It's the number of man. And why is it the number of man? Because the image of the beast is superficial. It's artificial. It's fake. It's not given over by the holy breath of God. It's not given over by our masterful creator. It's given over by earth dwellers who think that they're worshiping a great beast. But now let's finish the story here. Initially, those who bear the mark of the beast are given safety and security on the earth. Yet eventually their fate will change. Look over to chapter 14. Look over to chapter 14. As you notice into chapter 14, look at verse 9. And another angel, a third, followed them, saying with a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast and its image and receives a mark on his forehead or on his hand, he will drink the wine of God's wrath, poured full strength in the cup of his anger, and he will be tormented with fire and sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest day and night, these worshipers of the beast and its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name." If you look to chapter 16, 1 and 2, 19, verse 20 of Revelation, same thing. The anger of God's wrath is poured out in the bowls. Remember, Revelation has three different cycles of judgment. The seals, the trumpets, and the bowls. Here we learn in particularly of the bowls, which you'll note, very quick reference, is taken from Isaiah 5. Those who worship the beast, in the interim, yes, they're given safety and security and privilege on the earth. They're allowed to go and sell and trade and live. But eventually, what's going to happen? God will judge them for their wickedness. God will judge them for their idolatry. God will judge them for giving themselves over to the image of the beast. So before we continue, let's ask, what happens to those in this world who bear the image of the beast? Let me ask it another way. What happens to those who do not bear the image of God, but make false images for themselves? What happens to those who do not bear the true image that God gave in Genesis 1, but rather they bear an artificial image that we ourselves construct? Idolatry. Eventually, the text tells us clearly God's wrath will be poured out. It's a passage of judgment. And I think what John is doing here is reminding us, just as God from the beginning took his image as important, the end of the image is very important. God will look at those who have done wickedness and unrighteousness and have not borne the image of the true God, but have made false images for themselves and have borne the image of the beast and have even accepted the mark of the beast, and they'll be judged. As you go through Revelation 15, 16, and 17, it tells in graphic detail what these bowls consist of. Judgment will come. Unfortunately, that's not the end of the story. There's hope in the midst of this judgment. Now, first, brethren, let's understand how important it is in the story of Revelation to bearing the image of the beast. If you bear the image of the beast, bad things are going to happen. Judgment will come. But God is going to give hope for his people. In contrast to the image of the beast and the mark that it offers, Revelation is going to tell of the seal of God. In Revelation 14, verse 1, this is right after the image of 666. Notice what it says in Revelation 14, 1. "Then I looked, and behold, on Mount Zion, there stood the Lamb with his 144,000 who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads." Well, that's interesting. Here, in the midst of discussing those who have just received the mark of the beast, John looks up to Zion and he sees the Lamb and with him 144,000 people. And these are people who have his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. Different from the mark of the beast, isn't it? Well, where did they get this mark? Where did this mark come from? John tells us of its origins. Go back with me to Revelation chapter 7. Revelation chapter 7, verse 1. Revelation 7, verse 1. After this, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding back the four winds of the earth, that no wind might blow on the earth or the sea or against any tree. Then I saw another angel ascending from the rising of the sun with the seal of the living God. And he called with a loud voice to the four angels who had been given the power to harm earth and sea, saying, "Do not harm the earth or the sea or the trees until we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads." And I heard the number of the sealed, 144,000. Another sermon for another day to talk about the 144,000. Very quickly, it's talking about the representative of God's people, 12,000 from every tribe of Israel. But notice what happens here. God, the living God, is about to pour out judgment on this earth. But before he does that, he sends an angel, and this angel has the seal of the living God. And the angel and his host go, and they seal the servants of our God on their foreheads. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? We just read, those who worship the beast and its image get the mark of the beast on their forehead or on their right hand. Here we are reading of those who get the seal of the living God on their forehead or on their right hand. The servants of God are sealed. Well, very briefly, what is this seal? What's the seal that John here is talking about? For those of y'all that have studied Revelation with me, you know the first rule of Revelation, go to the Old Testament. John is really not that creative. He actually plagiarizes almost, pretty much everything he writes is taken from the Old Testament. It's just recapitulated in light of the cross. This seal is found directly out of the Old Testament in a few different places. The first one that we read of it, this seal, is in Ezekiel chapter 9. For the sake of time, I'm not going to take us through these passages. But in Ezekiel chapter 9, God warns Ezekiel, the temple is about to be destroyed, 586 BC. The temple is about to be destroyed. Before I send an angel into Jerusalem to destroy the temple and to destroy its inhabitants, I am going to go through and seal on the forehead those who are still righteous. Here's what it means. Those who are doing right, those who are doing goodness, those who are doing holiness, they are going to be sealed by the angel, sealed at the command of God. Now, this seal, by the way, is taken actually out of Exodus 12. In Exodus chapter 12, God is about to send an angel into Egypt to commit Passover. Those who are sealed are protected. They're kept safe. Now, let me ask this. Put this together. Revelation 7, picking up in Revelation 14, tells those who are sealed by the living God are going to be passed over for judgment. Ezekiel 9 tells us of the righteous who are going to be passed over in judgment. Who is this seal? What is it talking about? It's talking about the righteous. It's talking about those who are following the Lamb. It is talking about those who are living holy lives. They are sealed. And I don't think, by the way, it's coincidence that as you look in Ephesians 1:13 and Ephesians 4:30, that the Holy Spirit is referred to as the seal. And let me take this one step further. You'll remember in Revelation 13 that worshipers of the image of the beast are sealed by a false spirit. Here, the living God is sealing and protecting his people by his own spirit. Diane asked me a question a year and a half ago I didn't have the answer for. Why in Ephesians 1:13 does it say that we are sealed by the Spirit? Well, if I had just read Revelation, the answer is so clear. We are sealed by the Spirit because God is showing, these are my people. These are my people. Eventually, the earth will be purified and judgment will be poured out. But those who have my spirit are sealed. They are protected. My authority has been given and they are protected. And interestingly enough, these are the same people who bear the name of God. The seal that they get is the name of God on their foreheads, which comes right out of Isaiah 62. In Isaiah 62, the prophet Isaiah tells, my people will receive a new name. A new name they will be given. And it's ultimately going to be the name of God that will rest on their forehead. And it's no surprise then, as you work through the end of the book of Revelation, we learn what happens to those who are sealed by God. As you look over to Revelation chapter 15, verse 1, this picks up in the midst of the bowls. Notice what happens to those who are sealed. Revelation 15, verse 1. And I saw another sign in heaven, great and amazing. Seven angels with seven plagues, which are the last, for with them the wrath of God is finished. And I saw what appeared to be the sea of glass mingled with fire, and also those who had conquered the beast and its image and the number of its name, standing beside the sea of glass with harps of God in their hands. Notice what happens. There are those who have conquered the beast and its image. And very briefly, let me tell you, the beast in Revelation 13 is powerful and terrifying. It's the stuff of nightmares. That beast is given a power and dominion. But there are those who have overcome the beast. There are those that have conquered. And as you work toward the very end of the book of Revelation, look over to Revelation 22, verse 4. Revelation 3, 12 and 20, verse 4, follow in this same tenor of thought. But look at Revelation 22, verse 4. In talking of the new Eden that is going to come, they will see God's face, His presence, and His name will be on their foreheads. Put it all together with me. This is the narrative that John is telling. Yes, God will pour out judgment on those who have worshipped the beast and have borne His mark. But for those who have borne the image of God, the ones who have been sealed by the hand of the living God, they will overcome and conquer because the name of God is on their foreheads. What happens? Victory comes. Victory comes. And before we talk about the practical implications of what this means, I just want us to stop for a moment and understand the power of what we've just read. Brethren, the book of Revelation is a book, it's really the only book of the Bible that begins by offering a blessing to those that read it. And I think one of the reasons for that is Revelation is a powerful, moving, spiritual, conquering story of God defeating the forces of darkness. In one sentence, that's what all Revelation is about. No matter your take on the book, Revelation is about God defeating darkness. We've read of the fate of those who have worshipped the image of the beast and have made their own image. But what will happen for those of us who seek to bear the image of God? Well, Revelation's told us, you're going to be accursed in this life. You're going to be mocked and defiled. And perhaps this world will not even let you buy or sell or trade without the mark of the beast. Does that happen to those that bear the image of God? The slandering and accusations and hardships come against those who seek to bear the image of God from the beast? Of Of course it does. Of course it does. Quite practically, when I look at our culture today, it is becoming a mark of the beast to accept any new sexual ethic that this world will make. And if you are not willing to worship the image of the beast and accept its mark, you can't buy or sell here. You can't live here. Because this is the mark of the beast. Now, I don't think that's exactly what Revelation 13 is talking about, but I think it's a good application of the text. In this life, we should expect that those who bear the image of God are going to be cursed and misaligned for it. But at the end of all matters, when God wins, what's going to happen? Those who have been sealed by the living God will be given victory and eternal life and dwelling place with God. And the name of God will be on our foreheads, showing I am His. The same God that we read about last week from Isaiah 5, who is the caring, loving vine dresser of the field, is the same God that wants to give us His name on our foreheads. He's a caring, good God. But He will pour out judgment on those who bear the image of the beast. So what? Why does all this matter? Let's finish by reading Revelation 14. Revelation 14, verse 1. Then I looked, and behold, on Mount Zion, there stood the Lamb, and with Him 144,000 who had His name and His Father's name written on their foreheads. We know what that is. And I heard a voice from heaven like the roar of many waters, like the sound of loud thunder. The voice I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps. And they were singing a new song before the throne and before the living creatures and before the elders. No one could learn the song except the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the earth. It is these who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins. It is these who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. They have been redeemed from mankind as the first fruits for God and of the Lamb. And in their mouth was no lie, for they are blameless. James tells us the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle and open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. What happens to those who live out purity and the wisdom from above? It is these who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. These have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits for God and of the Lamb. Fruit of sanctification. Had to say it. And in their mouth was no lie, for they are blameless. Brethren, understand how important it is to the whole story of the cosmos, how we live. Heaven and hell, judgment and victory, overcoming versus defeat, the image of the beast versus the seal of God. That's what hangs in the balance. But for those who are pure and those who follow the Lamb, they have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits for God and the Lamb. And in their mouth no lie was found, for they are blameless. So, brethren, here's the end of the matter. We talked for months about going back to creation and what all that means, but John tells us where everything is heading. And here's the point. Let us overcome this world, its temptations, its marks, its idols. Let's overcome all that by bearing the image of God and of the Lamb. You can be getting out your songbooks at this time. What a good song for an invitation. Well, I hope the book of Revelation has made you look inside your own soul this morning. It's a powerful book. It's a powerful book because what it's telling us is of God's victory over evil. God's victory over evil. And I think that is a message that every single one of us need to take to heart. Because as we discussed in our series, bearing the image of God is not easy. It demands crucifying sin and living a life of holiness, a new life, a resurrected life. And yet daily that ancient dragon is arising to deceive the nations. Daily coming forth to deceive and take captive and lie. And such is the method of Satan. The one who is cast out is the one who continues to tempt and deceive and slander us before our holy God. He's trying to remove our image that God has given us so that we will worship His image. But it must be the conviction and the resolution, perhaps the revolution as well, but the resolution of each of God's people that I will not bow myself to the idol of the beast, but I will bear God's image. That's what Revelation commands us and teaches us, that we must bear God's image. The invitation, I think, is very self-explanatory this morning. Jesus has redeemed His people as the first fruits of all creation, not to give it over to the dragon and to the beasts, but to follow the Lamb who was slain for our sin. Come to Jesus. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, I ask you to come forward as we stand and sing.